What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, October 27th, 2017, aka the best day of video games of all time.
What did we call it?
It had a catchy name. Video Game Boner Jam, Boner Jam 2017. That's what we called it.
God,
all right.
What a day.
We nailed it that on the GameCast.
Happy Mario Odyssey, happy Assassin's Creed,
happy Wolfenstein 2.
Wolfenstein 2.
And happy day to you.
Oh, and Tim Geddes. Happy day to you. Man, you're looking good.
Thank you. I'm looking good, of course. It's the second time ever on Kinda Funny Games Daily. Second time this week, though. I haven't done a collared shirt. Mm-hmm. First time was for the promotion, of course. Kinda Funny Games Daily shirt. Cool girl, come stand here in it. You can get it at kindoffunny.com/store. Today, wearing the party mode shirt, now officially available as well. Kindoffunny.com/store. We heard you. We made these shirts. Everybody's stoked.
Please support them. I'm very stoked.
How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing fantastic, right?
Yeah? I got to play that Super Mario Odyssey last night.
Yeah, you
did. That is a good fucking game.
It's a damn good game.
Very excited to get back to it.
Damn good game.
You find yourself still in love with it?
I do. I haven't had it. I have beaten. I'm in the post game at this point.
Okay.
I'm very much looking forward to this weekend.
Yeah.
To getting back into it.
Sure.
A couple hours into that motherfucker here and there.
Good.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the post game.
Oh, I know what you mean.
The game's. Oh, man. It's just a good time to be alive. It's a good time to be a gamer.
It's a great time to be alive. If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about before giving you some perspective from our years in the business, answering your questions, reading bad PSN names, and hanging out with you. The Kinda Funny best friends. Remember, if you want to watch the show live, you can watch it at twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, but we don't look at the chat. Your questions come from kindoffunny.com/KFGD, and if you're a live viewer, your responsibility is to keep us honest. You need to go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Tell us what facts we screw up as we screw them up, so at the end of the show, we can set the record straight for everyone watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listening on podcast services around the globe. No matter where you get the show, thank you for supporting it. We love you and appreciate you. Tim?
Yes.
Housekeeping for you that bleeds kind of into the news and to what we've already talked about. Mm-hmm. Number one, Paris Games Week stream is coming up. We are going to be streaming it, reaction streams to it. We are kicking off Monday morning at 7:45 in the morning Pacific time because we want to get ready before the PlayStation pre-show that Sid and his boys will be doing, that Ryan Clements fella, I bet. They're doing a pre-show that's going to announce some stuff. We're about to talk about that in the Roper Report, so we'll get to that later. Then at 9 o'clock, the Paris Games Week press conference kicks off. Why this is important outside of the fact we'll be streaming reactions to it, when the Paris Games Week press conference for PlayStation ends, our post show will be Kinda Funny Games Daily. So if you are someone who watches it live, we're going to be earlier than usual. We'll be mainly talking about what happened there. I'll need you to go to kindoffunny.com/KFGD right after the Games Week thing to ask questions, talk to us about the show there. That's where we'll pull questions to be part of that thing. So basically, Monday's going to be a little bit crazy. Cool announcements because we'll talk about it later. Remember, kindoffunny.com/extralife is up a week from Saturday. We are doing Extra Life. That is November 4th, Saturday, November 4th, 24 hours of games on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, all raising money for the big, beautiful kids, the sick ones, over at the Children's Miracle Network. You can go right now to kindoffunny.com/extralife, donate to the team, or join up and stream yourself to raise money and be part of our team and hopefully help us raise
$100,000?
Is it $100,000? That sounds crazy to say.
It does.
We did $86,000 last year, 50 something before then. Let's see if we can do it this time. And then again, party mode, new shirt, kindoffunny.com/store, along with Kinda Funny Games Daily. Now, it's time to begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some Friday news, and Kevin's over there and looking fly. It's Friday. Four items technically on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen!
But there's been kind of a fifth breaking one, which we'll open with here, that I don't have a lot on. While we were doing the morning show, ace reporter Jason Schreier over at Kotaku...
Press sneak fuck is what he's known as.
Press sneak fuck. Oh, I remember this. Yeah, who said that?
I don't fucking remember.
Was it some message board or a person? Or?
Yeah, it was some developer on a fucking on gaff.
Okay.
Back in the day.
I like what I call him better. Ace reporter Jason Schreier at Kotaku put up a giant article about the end of Visceral, what
Real
happened.
Real video game journalism.
Talking to multiple sources. It's one of those that, even with me doing the morning show, I haven't had time to read the whole thing. You started to, but we have stuff too later on. It's not the usual Roper Report news of it. So it's like it's something to go read and digest and think about.
I mean, my thing is, I'm sure there's a lot of news to take from it. Yeah. I'm sure that you'll have some nice choice excerpts here.
Yeah.
But I just recommend you go to Kotaku.com right 100%. Now.
And that's read real.
Because looking through this thing, I'm like, this is impressive. Yeah. He has so many sources.
Jason's the best.
It is such a long, in-depth article.
Yeah.
And man, it's not no surface level bullshit.
What I'm going to read you is two paragraphs Jason put up on Twitter to accompany his announcement of this story that I think pretty much summarize what you're going to be getting into. Ragtag is what the code name was for this game. But the story behind Ragtag is more complicated than critics and pundits have assumed. The project was more troubled than EA had admitted publicly. Among game developers, it's been an open secret for months that Visceral's game was in danger. The studio had been bleeding staff for years, and recruiters across the video game industry exchanged whispers about Visceral employees who were looking for new work, according to several people who've shared these rumors with me over the past couple of years. Over the past week, I've talked to nearly a dozen former Visceral employees who worked on Ragtag, all of whom spoke anonymously because they did not want to risk damaging their careers. I've also spoken to several other developers who are tangentially connected to Visceral. They all share similar stories. Ragtag was a project sunk by many factors, including a lack of resources, a vision that was too ambitious for its budget, a difficult game engine, a director who clashed with staff, a studio located in one of the most expensive cities in the world, a reputation for toxicity, multiple conflicts between Visceral and EA, and what can only be described as the curse of Star Wars. Are you fucking kidding me? That sounds like the best opening to an article of all time.
Are you kidding
me? I can't wait to get in there and read it. We said from the moment it started that Jason would be the guy who would get all this, yep. And of course he did.
He's on
Kudos to you, Jason Schreier, as always, for fucking making awesome stuff happening and getting to the bottom of this. I'm excited to sit down and read it. It seems like it's a little of column A, column B from there, right? Mm-hmm. When you were going through it, you were like, talking here about, yeah, Amy and how where the project was in this, but also the fact that EA is kind of trying to move away from it, correct?
Yeah, or it sounds like there's some confirmation of at least the perspective of the people that were at Visceral that EA is like, well, hey, single-player games, they're not where, like, single-player games of this scope at this budget just don't make sense.
Gotcha.
For how hard, and then there's the other side of it, that single-player games of that scope at any budget require so much time and so much crunch and so much abuse.
Yeah.
That's where all those problems lie.
Well, yeah. So it's a little bit of column A, column B, according to this Jason article. I can't wait to get out of this show and go read it all, digest it myself. But it's up there, Kotaku.com, if you want to get into it. For right now, your official Roper report begins with number one, PlayStation on Paris Games Week. Base quote, E3 was only half the story. This is a PlayStation blog post put up over there, right?
What a great headline.
Right? They're saying, of course, that Monday, October 30th, at 9 a.m., they are doing their Paris Games Week press conference. As I've already said, we'll go live 7:45 to talk about the pre-show that's going there. Because they say, quote, but plan to tune in early at 8 a.m. We'll begin with an introductory live stream featuring 21 game updates, including 7 all-new game announcements for PlayStation 4 and PlayStation VR. You won't want to miss it. Then, at 9 a.m., our media showcase will give you an exclusive new look at the next wave of huge PlayStation titles. Hoo-wee! Hoo-wee!
It's like October 27th. Boner Jam? Not enough.
Yeah.
Here. Have a little something after the weekend of playing all those games.
Yeah.
Look forward to all the new games you're going to be playing next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, I'm so excited about this. There's a lot of key things here that are great, including the fact that they are comparing this to E3.
Yeah. That's
and in saying that this is the other half of what we saw at E3. Now, granted, this year's E3 for Sony, not necessarily their best that they've had in the last couple of years, well, but still a very solid
E3.
Yeah, but it wasn't the year of dreams.
Sure, okay.
Yeah. But I mean, it was like, it was solid, very good, saw a lot of great stuff, but we didn't get the, you know,
okay, insane, okay, the mega
mind announcements.
Gotcha,
yeah.
Gotcha.
But here we go, man. Get hyped.
Javier Bonet Ruiz writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD, just like you can, and says, Greg, what a hell of a day to be alive. Wolfenstein 2, Assassin's Creed Origins, and Mario Odyssey, as well as Stranger Things 2 and Jigsaw.
Jigsaw?
It's also my 23rd birthday today.
Hey, happy birthday.
Javier. Now to my question. Sony has announced that they are going to announce 7 new games at Paris Games Week. What games do you want to see? Personally, I want Bloodborne 2 and the Order 1886 sequel. I'm sure everyone wants to know what the heck Sucker Punch is making. Greetings from Florida. here's the, I want to talk about what those seven games we think are going to be, but also what we think this press conference is going to be. Because what I'm assuming, if this is the second half of E3, that means, cool, we said 2018, first half of the year for all these games, which means Spider-Man is coming out on this day, which means this is happening on this, right? Is that where your head's at?
I imagine, right? Like, this is like, all right, cool, we got people hyped with that stuff. Now we need some dates. Now we need to really start looking forward to early next year and what we're going to be playing. Because when you look at Sony's last couple of years, like, we've seen the trend of them kind of avoiding the holiday season when it comes to their
first party
games. And really owning that January to March area with some
that
things.
First part of,
and you know, I think they've learned the last couple of years that the games are going to get delayed, the games are going to get pushed. Like, let's just get ahead of it and go from there. And I think that's what we're seeing now. So I wouldn't be surprised if enough of those games that they're like, we're confident that we can hit these dates, let's put a date on them.
Yeah,
and they go from there. But I also think that we're going to see some big new games. Now, what's interesting is this, including 7 all new game announcements and 21 updates. But that's, the way this is worded makes it seem like that's just during the pre-live stream, not during the media showcase.
Correct.
So those 7 games, I don't expect them to be
megaton
announcements. Yeah, Maybe one. There might be one just to like it. This is an obvious cry to people of, hey, you should watch the pre-show. There's going to be announcements.
And we did not take seriously for E3, and that's where Hidden Agenda was. That's where That's You was. It's where the whole PlayLink announcement.
Yeah, so I think that they want people to pay attention to that. So maybe they'll throw something a little bit bigger than those things just to like tell the press, like, hey, you should pay attention to this going forward. That seems like E3. And so I imagine it'll be like smaller titles, and especially the PSVR. Like, we'll see that stuff.
PlayStation VR, I think, is where they're going to hang hard on that. Hey, there's 7 new games. That's what I'm expecting. Yep. I'm expecting some indies. Exactly. I'm expecting some VR stuff.
So Bloodborne 2, Order 1886, I don't think those would be counted as one of the 7 all new games. Now, they don't say if there's going to be any new games during the media showcase. Sure. I can guarantee there will be.
Oh, yeah?
I think so. Because I think that you need to start putting the dates out for the games we already know about. But this seems like a E3 level press conference. There has to be surprises. There has to be some big stuff. And it's like, cool, we now know what we're looking forward to first half of 2018. Is it too early to at least start talking about fall 2018?
I don't think it is. And I think that's what they're going to do, right? Is I feel like it'll be, if we're reading the tea leaves right on this, E3 was just the beginning, or, you know, this is only half. The second half has to be, here's the dates we're talking about for these games where we told you they're in the first half of the year for 2018. Remember, Detroit Become Human wasn't part of that. It got a 2018. They said 2018, but they didn't put it on their trailer. So that was how they dodged it. We're talking about God of War. We're talking about Spider-Man. That's where we're at with those.
Shadow, right?
I forget Shadow now. Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. And I was jumping to Days Gone. I don't think Days Gone ended with 2018, did it? Saying that it was going to be that first half. It's been so long since E3. Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. But it is Paris Games Week. I do expect them to let the international, you know, your European studio shine.
The dreams.
So I think Detroit comes out, and I think that maybe you don't get a release date if we just gave a gajillion release dates, but maybe you drive home again in 2018, second half of 2018, fall 2018, something to that effect.
Yeah.
And then Dreams is the big question. Media Molecule still working on this game, still toiling away on it. Is it a game yet? What is it? What I fear for is, what if Dreams is one of the games that gets updated in the pre-show?
Ooh, I can see that.
Because what if it's gone full VR? What if they're pushing?
I think that makes sense, though.
Does it? I mean, it makes sense, but it's also like, for me, and maybe I'm too old school. I've noticed, you know, with the changing landscape of video games, I get so hung up on where things are placement. But I mean, like, fucking Media Molecule, like, who were like a gem, a darling of first-party Sony, if they don't get full-blown stage time to actually show you this game during this press conference, and instead it is just like, hey, here's a video. Not that those games are less than, Hidden Agenda is awesome, we put up a Let's Play, we really do dig it. I really loved That's You, another one we put up a Let's Play of, but it's not the same as coming out on stage and being like, hey, everybody,
no,
look at
it's
this
not
fucking awesome.
It's not, and I think that's why Dreams belongs in the pre-show.
Oh, wow.
I think that Dreams isn't that thing. I mean, they had their time. They've been there.
Yeah.
They've already had that.
Yeah.
And what that game is, where it'll end up, I don't know.
Yeah.
Who the fuck knows?
Nobody
knows. I do think that at this point, relegate that to the pre-show that they are still pushing. It's not like this blog post that they're just putting up.
I definitely think we, as an industry and as a community learned our lesson on E3 of like, oh, fuck, no, they were serious. They were doing stuff there, which is why I'm taking this so seriously and why so many of you who wrote in today are taking it seriously as well, right? Like, E3 was only half of the story is a bold fucking claim to make.
It is.
And PlayStation knows what that means. They're not stupid.
Well, let's stop and think about E3 this year, and them actually referencing E3 is interesting because people don't normally do that, right? Like, we talk about E3 and the conventions as these kind of
watershed
ongoing
moments.
Things.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that Sony is using a conference referring to another conference. Like, that's expecting a lot from the general public. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, this is a message to the uses of the world. Which I know it's PlayStation
Blog.
Uses
rule the world now.
I get this PlayStation Blog. I'd see that it's targeted that way. But I still think that that's a pretty unique way to handle it. I think it's great. I think that's being very connected to the audience that's there.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're all there, like, thinking about what's shown here, what's shown there. But this being the other half of this E3 and them referencing that, to me, I'm like, all right, cool. There was a lot of games we didn't see at E3 this year. We didn't see Death Stranding. We didn't see Last of Us Part 2. Mm-hmm. We didn't see Final Fantasy VII Remake. And yeah, am I getting ahead of myself because I'm naming all the super big guns?
Sure.
Yeah, but we didn't see them at E3. Will we see them here? Will we get some update here? Because it is the other half of their lineup.
It's so weird because, yeah, I would say no. I say anything you're going to see there, their message has to be, hey, 2017 was a banner year for us, right? Horizon was awesome. There's still DLC coming. PlayStation Pro saw this much success. PlayStation VR sold
Lost
this
Legacy.
Much. Yeah, Lost Legacy, a big part of it. Now it's time to turn our sights to 2018. At E3, we showed you these games and said they were coming out in the first half of the year. Let's check in, run over that. You get dates for all that, and it only goes up to, you figure, June or summer or whatever, right? And then they're going to come back and be like, that's not all, though, for 2018. But they're all, by the way, they're saying all this with a French accent. Bonjour, that's not all. You know, that was Cajun almost. And I mean, it was terrible to begin with. Anyways, then they're like, and here's, you know, in the second half or fall, you're going to see Detroit Become Human. You're going to see Dreams. Like, you know, I feel like that's the way I'd go. I wouldn't go out to, like, Death Stranding, Last of Us 2. Those aren't 2018 games. So let's not even bother bringing them up. Because what if we do that, then when we show them at E3 this year to talk about what's happening in 2019, 2020, like, you can't, you know what I mean? Like, they've got to be very, there's a time schedule here. There's a clock they're looking at now to start figuring out where they're breaking stuff up.
But I still think there's something to be said for hype.
When it comes
to just like, yeah, you're getting these, but also in the future. It's like, build that roadmap. Keep that shit going. Because my thing is, and this is an argument we've had a million times on all the shows, like, okay, cool, we're going to be getting God of War and Spider-Man and these games in early
Days
2018.
Gone.
But it's, yeah, maybe Days Gone at some point, whatever. But it's like, I like having these big tentpole experiences to look forward to that, yeah, man, Last of Us 2 is coming. Like, Death Stranding's coming. Like, and I know that, like, how many times can they just remind us and how many times can they show us a CG trailer of some weird shit happening to actors in Kojima's universe? But
Emma Stone.
But here we go. Yeah, where is she at? I like that stuff. And I do think that it goes a very long way in showing a future in PlayStation that you can totally believe in. And I think that that's the type of stuff that makes people even more so believe in the PlayStation ecosystem.
I hear you. I just feel like if what I just pitched of, like, here's 2018 happens, no one's going to be, we're all going to be like, what the fuck? Holy shit, that's all guns blazing. I don't think you need to also be like, and then later on the line, Death Stranding is coming, and Last of Us 2. And, like, I think you can save that for E3. Or, hold on, we're getting ahead of ourselves too. Because Magnus Legatus. Wrote it to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, long time, first time, and I've got a short one for you. The PlayStation social media accounts are really pushing their Paris Games Week conference on October 30th, even going as far as calling it the second half of E3 on Twitter. Are we sleeping on how substantial this press conference is going to be? Answer that, as we've been talking about, I think, pretty clearly.
We were until now. Yeah.
And then he goes, sure. If it really is the second half of E3, what does this mean for PSX? You guys and gals inspire me day in, day out. Magnus Legatus. That is the million-dollar question, Magnus. What does this mean for PSX? Because that could be the opposite way of it, right? Of what you're talking about. Of Paris Games Week is this fucking slobber knocker, punch in the face. 2018 is going to be crazy. That's all we're talking about. And then PSX could be, hey,
here's the hype.
Here, we just had a great week at Paris Games Week. This is what it is. Let's show you a Last of Us teaser. Let's show you something from Death Stranding. Let's bring out the developers let's bring out the people behind the games you just saw at Paris Games Week and have them really talk about what they're doing and what their vision is.
I think that's putting a little too much faith in Sony to trust in the audience.
What do you mean?
You know, and like to give the audience, it's too much fan service, I think. Like, that's too good to be true.
PSX is.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's too good to be true. That's what we want PSX to be, but it's not.
Okay.
Like, PSX is always almost that, but it's never really quite that.
They put Geo Corsi on stage, all right? That's fan service.
There's yes, but I'm saying, like, I would love, and I think that it would be perfect if PSX was just the pure hype. It was pure just like, everyone in this room wants to fucking be here and have their minds blown.
Yeah.
Let's blow their fucking minds.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that they have the balls to do that.
I mean, that's what's so interesting about this, them saying this is the other half of E3. It's like, that sounds awesome. That sounds super exciting. What does that mean for PSX?
Yeah.
Because it had up until this point, it always, or not this point, I shouldn't say that, but even with like the past PSXs before this, it was a more, hey, it's E3, and then it's PSX. And Paris Games Week had a few little things, but Paris Games Week hadn't been an event for PlayStation in a while.
Yeah. I mean, bless you. Another thing we talked about a lot is, and because we were making predictions for Paris Games Week a couple weeks ago, and PSX was that second half to E3, but even then, I don't think it was ever really defined that way. And it always felt like the other side of E3, where it was a bit more like, we're going to talk about the Japanese games that are coming over. We're going to talk about the...
Only the people crazy enough to come to a convention about PlayStation, we're going to talk about the games, those games that you'd care about.
And we're also going to show Uncharted 4 for the first time. Yeah. You know what I mean? But yeah, that type of stuff. But I think that Paris Games Week is very much the, let's check in with the international developers. Let's check in with what's going on with games that aren't necessarily the biggest games in America. That type of stuff.
Yeah, I hear you.
So for this is a definite shift in all of that. And now that they have their pre-live streams that are kind of PSX.
Sure.
You know, to an extent.
I hear you. I'll give it to you.
I don't know. And having one of those at E3 and one of those for this.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens at PSX this year and how they counterbalance that. The other, not hope, I guess, but you figure on top of all of this shit we're talking about, let's not forget that the Thursday before PSX is the Game Awards.
Game Awards,
and there's always some trailer. There's always some teaser announcement.
Last of Us was announced at Game Awards.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, what?
So totally they could do something.
They have a lot of milestones in front of them, but for the first time ever, not the first time ever, but the first time in a while, they're making a big deal about this, and then there's Game Awards, and then there's PSX. That's a really tight window, and I don't know how many juggle all those balls and keep it going.
And also, this is a substantial amount of time. Like, for the pre-show, it's a full hour.
Yeah.
Like, guaranteed full hour with 21 game updates, 7 all new games. And then starting at 9, who knows how long the media showcase is, but you got to imagine the showcase is at least as long as the
pre-show.
The pre-show.
Yeah, I would think, an hour.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Man.
Monday's going to be exciting, everybody. Tune in here.
Monday.
We'll be streaming
Monday.
It all 7:45 in the morning. I'll have coffee. Number two, jumping off a little bit of the obviously Jason's story we started with, and then just conversations lately. And the Xbox boss is talking about single-player games over here. This is Shannon Loftus, of course, who's... I didn't put it down. This is a GameSpot article. You can go read it there. I believe she's head of my Xbox game publishing is her official title. Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, though. Just go to the GameSpot article and tell me. They were over there, the GameSpot folks, talking to her about single-player stuff. I'm jumping into the middle of the article, pulling some quotes and then reading. Quote, game development in general is about a couple of things. It's about delivering an experience, and it's about telling stories. I mean, delivering an experience, I bet, is what that typo is. And it's about telling stories. Storytelling is as central to game development as it has ever been, Loftus said. And then now we're talking about single player. I don't think it's dead per se, Loftus said about the market for exclusively single-player games. I do think the economics of taking a single-player game and telling a very high-fidelity, multi-hour story get a little more complicated. Gamers want higher fidelity, and they want higher resolution graphics, end quote. In Loftus's estimation, single-player-only games will exist forever, though it's possible they may become less prevalent. Quote, I don't think there is ever going to be a time when there aren't single-player story-based games, she said. I do love the idea of building a community around the experience of these games, end quote. Loftus added that she wants to find a way to help. She wants to find a way for a wider Xbox community to get together and enjoy, quote, shared experience of single-player game that affected them in some way. She pointed out the Red Wedding episode of Game of Thrones as a moment where fans were so affected by what happened that they came together to discuss and post videos about their reactions on YouTube. Nothing groundbreaking there.
No.
It's interesting to hear someone high up at Xbox, or anybody for that matter, talk about this, though.
Yeah, definitely.
And that they don't think single player is going to go away, but how can they take what's happening in
and adapt
the internet in general? And this Red Wedding thing is a very, very interesting way of thinking about it.
It is. And what to me, what's interesting about it is the idea that I've seen a lot of people talking about single player games, and one of the arguments being made for why they're seem to be going away right now, in addition to the games of services making money and all that, is the fact that a lot of people with Twitch streaming and all that are ruining the single player experiences for themselves and don't need to play the game because they're watching people play through it. And if they're watching them play through for the story,
why would they go buy
it and all of that? Thank you. Here, the gamers want higher fidelity. They want higher resolution graphics. It's like, all right, cool, great. With the power of the Xbox One X,
the most powerful console on the market.
It's like, do they? Like, that's the a big question where, I mean, there's you can't speak for gamers as a whole.
Yeah.
There is no they. There's a bunch of different theys, right? But aren't we at a point that we don't need to be pushing that stuff for the single player experiences? Like, it's good enough. Like, we'll always have the games like Uncharted that are going to like be that pushing it forward.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then there's games like Wolfenstein that aren't these pushing the limits of what's capable. It's like, no, man, let's just fucking make a great story. Not to shed Wolfenstein, but it's like,
it's beautiful and it's fast and it runs really well.
Yeah. But it's that's all you need. It doesn't need to be this like,
look at the pixels on BJ's hand when he does this.
Exactly. Gotcha. We've kind of done it. Like, graphics are good.
Right.
You know, this isn't the PS2 days. Like, I mean, even it's not PS3 days. Like, we're at a place where it's like, shit looks fucking good.
Yeah. No, you make it. I mean, that's an interesting point. Yeah. And I don't know if you're seeing gamers clamor for that in that way. It's always the argument when somebody wants to debate PC versus console, right? And the fact that, well, 60 frames per second, well, this, that, the other, or high resolution, you know, that's not what I play games for, and it's clearly not what a lot of people play games for, like you're saying. And the fact that, well, that's great, but PlayStation 4 is selling like crazy, and yeah. Xbox doing well on the Switch isn't even on that those standards and selling well.
But my thing is, I see that totally differently because that is options. That is an option for you can play the game, and it's totally fine playing it here, and it looks really good, but it could also look better if you want to do this. And yeah, that requires more resources and more this, more that, but it's like, at the end of the day, the frame rate and things like that do affect the game and affect how the game feels, and the higher fidelity and all that. No, it doesn't. Like, to an extent, like, once we've hit a standard that I think we've hit, we're good.
Well, no, the standard you talk about makes sense, right? And that's what Xbox is always talking about, and the fact that console generations are dead, this is it, and then we'll iterate with our boxes. I point off screen to the Xbox One X we got yesterday, of like, that, you know, is going to be the one that you can go backwards on, you can go forwards on. Yeah. And so, the standard is there right now to what you're saying. This is the baseline games have to look like, but they can be better. They can be worse, too.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a scary thing because single-player games are my favorite. These multi-hour, story-based single-player games, I am all about them, and I always have been.
Yeah.
And it does suck that, they do require a lot more time and money and resources, because when you're going through a story, and that's what the point of the game is, locations can't be just the same tile over and over and over and over. There needs to be so many unique areas you go, whereas multiplayer games, you're on a map. You know, that is the map. It's okay that it's the same map you're playing 1,000 times. Single player games don't work that way. Then you see things like Hellblade, where that is not necessarily a 10-hour experience. It's a smaller experience, and I hope that we get more of that. You know, where it's not like budget is a the wrong way to refer to that game.
Game looks beautiful too. Great facial animations.
And that's kind of what I'm saying. It's like, let's adapt. Let's make smaller experiences that still get the point across.
Yeah. And I think, as I've said on the show this week, I think that is the future in some respect, right? Even if AAA wants to recede a bit on the single player experience, you're going to see indies step up and 100%. Be able to do that. And we're to the point like you're talking about where, you know, Hellblade's a small team. You know what I mean? Like, they're able to pull that off in a way that you wouldn't have been able to pull that off 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But now they can, and you're going to see other people be able to step up and do that as well. I'm still fascinated, though, that, like, Loftus wants to find a way, which means Xbox wants to find a way to enjoy a shared experience of single-player game and what that actually looks like, how that actually shapes.
I mean, I think that what that looks like is something like Until Dawn being mixed with the playlink style, hidden agenda style things, where it's you are playing a game along with people and having different experiences.
Well, the interesting thing will be is like, this, it's not going to be one for one, so stick with me. but even Netflix now with Stranger Things 2 having the Beyond Stranger Things post show, and Walking Dead having the Talking Dead with Hardwick. What the video game equivalent of that currently exists in a million different places. You can go to IGN and watch a discussion on GameScoop. You can go to GameSpot. You can go here. Like, all these conversations are happening. What she seems to be talking about is how Xbox can own that for their single player games, or how you do, and how do you make that happen? I don't know. I thought, interestingly enough, and granted, I'm totally, I was on it. I thought Telltale doing it with Batman, where we were doing Batman Unmasked, was a step in the right direction. Mm. The problem with that show was is that it never worked the way we originally, or that it was originally pitched to me, and this isn't a knock against them. I thought it was going to be we would play the game ahead of time, we would then talk about it, and then when you finish it, it would be the video would pop up and be like, hey, you just finished episode one, let's talk about episode one. But in the way the production pipelines work and the way that they had to get approvals from DC and stuff, that was never the case. So it was like they randomly came out. But the first company that could do that, where I finish a game, the credits roll, and from the bottom, it comes up, and it's like, what's up, everybody? I'm Greg Miller. You just finished Hellblade. I'm here with the developer, the writer, this, that, and the other. Let's have a conversation about it, and let's go over the choices that were made and how, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's, I mean, that'd be really cool, and I think could happen. The problem I foresee with that is that works for something like Telltale that is episodic and short by nature. But I mean, you're gonna, what does that look like for Halo 5, right?
Yeah.
Or 6, where the game comes out and like after the campaign, there's what, one video, like one discussion. Like, I don't know how much that would really help when it's kind of a tentpole event that is just then over.
Yeah, I hear you, but I still think it could be done. Like, I jump to what I know best. So I think of, you finish Last of Us Part 2, and a video pops up, and it is a host, whether it be Scott Lowe, or it's me, or it's Arnie, or somebody like that, right, who's talking to Neil, and talking to Troy, and talking about this. And it's a kicker on their side of, like, cool, hey, this thing's here now, while you watch the credits, or whatever, mm-hmm. it's playing down low, you expand it, and it's driving home the fact that what we're talking about exists, even in single player, of, like, there's a community here. Not a game, not games as a service, but there's a community here of, like, come to our forums and continue this conversation. We're doing this multiplayer event after the fact here. You know what I mean? Like, that keeps you more engaged than the point of, like, so many publishers, developers are trying to build their own communities and are doing it. Like, look at Bungie, right? They do a great job with their forums. They do a great job keeping everybody invested, but they're not taking the lessons we are learning as YouTube creators and applying that to their content yet. And granted, because it's hard and it's another skill set, and like, we know how strapped we are for resources, let alone you fucking make a video game. I don't do that. But people are trying to Twitch stream their games after the fact. I feel like there's something there in like what she's talking about of how you bring everybody together to react.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's that. I have no idea what the technology would be for this, but I finish the game, I start watching that, and then whoever else is finishing it too, what if there was a chat there, like Twitch, where we were talking? This doesn't work with a controller and a million other things, but I'm saying there's something there to get to what she's talking about.
Yeah.
And that's, it would be interesting to see how people try to bring that in.
I'm into it.
Number three, Resident Evil 7 crushed on PlayStation VR in terms of hours played. What I'm going to do here is read a bit from Engadget's awesome PSVR article. If you haven't read it, go to Engadget. They have this great piece about where PSVR, you know, people, where it is now to their estimations, where Andy House says it was before, the fact that it took him longer than, is like, it's a really great breakdown of like what the fuck is happening with what we know. However, the article includes the following paragraphs. PSVR players spend an average of 25 minutes with the headset on at a time. Quote, a lot of bite-sized experiences, Sony PR said. But Resident Evil 7's special brand of bloody terror stretched that to nearly an hour. It was a smart way to kick off the PlayStation VR's year. Still, the VR market overall is moving at a more sluggish pace than many watchdogs expected. In March 2016, a securities analyst said he expected Sony to sell 8 million PlayStation VR headsets in its first 2 years. Another analyst estimated 4 million sales in the first year. Nokia recently shut down production of its Ozo VR camera, citing, quote, slower than expected development of the VR market, end quote. But virtual reality is far from dead. The second generation of VR devices is on its way. Oculus has two wireless devices in the works. The $200 Go is scheduled to land in early 2018, and the Project Santa Cruz, a truly impressive untethered headset, should ship to developers sometime that year. Earlier this month, Sony revealed an updated version of its PSVR with integrated headphones and HDR pass-through support. It's already out on sale in Japan. Microsoft is also diving into the world of mixed and virtual reality in a big way, recently opening a collaborative studio space in San Francisco to help developers create these types of experiences. Globally, Superdata Research expects the VR market to generate $2.2 billion this year, and that estimate jumps to $28.5 billion by 2020. Much of this growth is driven by mobile VR devices, including Google Daydream and Samsung Gear VR. PSVR has proven there's healthy interest in accessible standalone VR, at least when it comes to gaming. What's left is to see how long this intrigue can last. Not too much to discuss, other than the fact that, yeah, you make a AAA awesome VR game, people sit there and play it. 100%. I played half of Resident Evil in VR,
yeah.
And then it was just, I forgot, I was lazy and wanted to lay on my couch and be fat, and then I was like, that's how I finished the game.
Yeah,
it was great, though. That's the kind of experience I want, and I understand we're getting there. It's baby steps. This is, like we've said before, Gen 1, PS1, blah, 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 blah. We're getting there. PlayStation is iterating on the headset. I'm still very fascinated to see where all this goes. I still need to play fucking Super Megaton Rainfall. That's, you're a superhero. You fly around.
Oh,
and put
cool.
up,
Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, VR. We've talked about it a lot. I don't really have much to add on that front. But Resident Evil 7, I haven't thought about that game in a long time.
I was talking about it yesterday for Game of the Year stuff, where it's like, can you believe that's in the running for 2017? We totally forget about
it. It's there, man. And that's nuts. But like, it makes me happy that with all this talk of single-player games dying, we've got a lot of great single-player games this year. And that, hopefully, there's a lot of doom and gloom out there. Just because we're in the moment and we're in the heat of the fall games that are the games of service. Yeah. And yeah, the Star Wars thing is sad and all that. But man, there's been a ton of great single-player games.
It's been a fucking awesome year for games. Number four, a quick one here. This is Reggie on GameCube support. And I apologize. I think I pulled this from Kotaku, but I did not source it. We hit up... Damn, yeah. Somebody... kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, because that was going to annoy me if it was Kotaku... It wasn't Polygon, I don't think. I got linked to it from somebody else. Anyways, there's a question if the GameCube support was a mistake on putting it through on the Switch. We hit upon the surprise support of GameCube controllers for the Switch, a feature that popped up in the system's newest firmware. Quote, in our latest system software update, it enables third-party peripherals to work on Nintendo Switch, Reggie explained. As a result, the peripheral for Wii U that allows it to attach GameCube controllers also works, end quote. A sign of Super Smash Bros. Melee support incoming, question mark? Quote from Reggie. Of course, there's nothing to announce on this, he said. I think it's fair to say, Steven, so it would have been Totillo, so it would have been Kotaku, that peripheral working was as much a surprise to us as it was to consumers, end quote.
What? That's a weird, I mean, I get that he's talking, he obviously has a relationship with Steven, so they're having a bit more casual of a conversation than normal. I do think it's a weird thing for him to say that, of course, there's nothing to announce on this. Why is it of course?
Because this isn't how they would announce it.
Yeah.
Here's my, you have to sit here and ask yourself, is this an honest flub from Nintendo, or is this Reggie just having to cover, of course we're not doing that because no, we're really doing that and we want to make a big deal about it.
I mean, my thing is, I honestly believe that the GameCube controller peripheral working on this has no sign, has nothing to do with GameCube Virtual Console or Smash Brothers.
Wow.
I think those things are happening
for
sure. I think that what he's saying is like they added support for third-party peripherals. So yeah, the USB thing now has function. You plug the USB in, it works. Like, this is just another peripheral, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think that there's any reason to look too far into this being like a thing of like, oh, they're trying to make this work. It's like, no, like, there's just a lot of USB things you can plug in that do different things.
Yeah.
Right? But is Smash happened? Yeah. Is Virtual Console happening? I still really believe that we're going to get GameCube games. I hope I'm not wrong.
I hope so. I hope you're not wrong either. I think I like to just fall into the side. He's just trying to cover this up. But yeah, this is something, this is all tied together. It's just, we didn't think it was going to, you know, we didn't want it to happen this way. We didn't want you to know about it this way. We're just, guys, don't worry about it. There's nothing to announce.
I mean, I also think it's funny that specifically Smash Bros. Melee was asked about. Because it's like, that's, That would be outing Virtual Console.
Yeah.
GameCube support.
Tim.
Yeah.
I want to play GameCube games on my Switch.
Sure you do.
But they're so far away. Mm. If I wanted to play new games, where would I go to find out where the new games were?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today, as if you needed me to remind you some of this stuff. Stranger Things.
Boner Jam.
It's Video Game Boner Jam 2017. Stranger Things is getting skins in Minecraft. Then, of course, Assassin's Creed Origins is on Xbox One, PS4, PC. Super Mario Odyssey is on Switch. Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus is on Xbox One, PS4, PC. All three of those games seem to be delivering. So if you are interested in them, try them out. Gamescast talks about them all. Kind of funny. No, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Available
Bruce
for
Green with from Bruce Funhouse. Green.
Available for free on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames Monday. And then Little Nightmares Complete Edition comes to PlayStation 4 to fucking kill all three of those games.
Yeah, what a great day.
Guaranteed to sell way more than the rest of them. Time to check in with the readers.
Let's check in with them readers.
Where do I want to start? The Muffin Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Writes in and says, hey, y'all. So I just bought my three brothers, ages 14 to 18, a Switch for Christmas. Parentheses. Was scared they'd be sold out again soon. What a great brother that is. Just bought three Switches for your bros.
Damn.
What are the most essential games that I should get for them on day one? So far, I have Super Mario Odyssey and Mario Kart. Love the show. Keep up the good work. You got to throw Zelda in there. I mean, this is the thing where, like, there's a lot of Switch games, but I feel like we're going to go through well-worn territory here.
I mean, dude, 14 to 18, you're capable of Zelda. You're more than capable.
Yeah, totally.
Zelda's what's missing from this equation right here. There is a lot of really great Switch games, but I mean, if I'm being honest, you're kind of nailing it.
Yeah.
But between Zelda, Odyssey, and Kart being the more just kind of pick up and play fun thing, I think you got a really solid time.
Rather than pile more games into this, I would say get them all Pro Controllers. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
Take your money there. Oh, it's cool? Fuck you, dude.
I don't know.
This is why you're not good at Mario Kart. You don't play with the right instruments.
That's the thing is the Zelda and, well... A Pro Controller. They have three kids. Let's see.
No. These are he bought his three brothers a Switch for Christmas.
So they have one set of Joy-Cons. So let's get... Yeah, we'll get him two Pro Controllers. We'll be good. That third kid can use the fucking Joy-Cons.
So I'm reading this that he bought three Switches. You're saying he bought one Switch for these three brothers.
I bought my three brothers a Switch.
I think, yeah, I understand that, but I still think that could go either way. You're buying here's the thing. You're buying an 18-year-old a Switch? He's moving out. Get a fucking job. You know what I mean?
Be an adult. I don't think the Muffin Boy is, like, throwing cash around like that.
I like to think the Muffin Boy is.
I mean, I believe in him. I wish he was.
All right, then I would take it back. Then don't get him all. Yes, I was. Okay, my apologies. I was saying buy the Pro Controller for each of the Switches. But even still, no, buy three Pro Controllers. You got the Joy-Cons and then three Pro Controllers. No, it isn't, because then everybody's totally playing Kart the right way.
No, Kart's fine with the Joy-Cons.
It's fine. Totally fine. So what? They still need more? You want them just to buy more Joy-Cons?
No, buy two Pro Controllers. Not everyone needs the Pro Controller. The Pro Controllers are fine, but it's like, I've even found that I have too much controllers now. I'm like,
Yeah.
Like, there's just, I have so much shit.
But there's the problem
My friends
there.
Came over, I had four people, and I was just like, great, we don't need all of these things. We're good.
Well, sure, but that's because, how often your friends come over, you know what I mean? What am I missing? He's going to have the Joy-Cons, and then he needs three other controllers for the kids to play. And him. He's not going to want to play games with
Okay. If you're including him, then yeah, you're right.
All
right.
Thank you. Jesus, man. You're fucking pulling teeth today. Tim woke up on the wrong side of
Jesus. Even then, I'd recommend getting another set of Joy-Cons and two Pro Controllers, just so that you're covered for future-proofing with other games.
Joy-Cons. Get the shit out of here with this Joy-Con.
One of them, like... You think you're cool. That's what it is.
I do think I'm cool.
I know I'm cool, actually.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because I have this shirt from kindoffunny.com/store, this party mode shirt. If you're not watching it, like you're listening on a podcast, pull your car over to the shoulder right now and Google it.
Drop your pants.
Drop it. What? What'd you? What?
I don't know.
Why not? Pete writes in and says, with the positive critical reception for both Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey, do you think this will push Nintendo to transition more titles into an open world structure with a focus on exploration? I'm thinking open world Metroid, Donkey Kong, and Kid Icarus with big maps to explore and lots of things to do scattered all around. Thanks for your time and have a great weekend. Why not, Pete?
No.
Yeah.
So here's a very important thing to keep in mind. Critical reception, extremely important. But you know what's more important? Sales. Mm. You know what doesn't sell as well as 2D Mario games? 3D Mario games.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know what doesn't sell that well, all things considered? Zelda.
Yeah.
Now, we're bumping trends here. The Switch is a major success. These games are doing super well, and they're going to sell a butt ton of copies.
Butt ton.
But what's going to sell more copies is 2D Mario when it comes out. Mm. I think it's great that Nintendo came out with those critical hits, knowing that they were going to sell, well, not knowing, but now knowing that they're going to sell super well because the Switch has a really good attach rate and all that. Let's get that going. But yeah, man, it's going to be, when once we get to the Pokemon and 2D Mario games and all that, like you'll see that the more traditional Nintendo start to show.
Okay. And I also think that they're smart enough to know that it's not open world making either the Mario or Zelda successful. It's the fact that it's a great game. This gameplay and this setup works for that game. Yeah. And that's why they're doing it. I want to continue. Just knock out these, you know, Switch super related ones, right? Mm-hmm. And because it's weird. One of the questions to kindoffunny.com/KFGD was just a snarky comment from us. He's like, do you remember when Kind of Funny Games Daily wasn't a Switch podcast? I do. And I was like, when did we talk about a Switch that much this week? Like, we talk about it all the time because it's good. But he's like, but here we really are focused on Switch questions. So fuck you, you piece of shit kid, right? Yeah, now trying to get under my skin. Shit. No one gets under my skin.
Hey, Nintendo's having a good year. Let us fucking have it. Deal with it, okay? Things are good.
Ryan T writes in to say things aren't good with Nintendo. He writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, Greg, can we talk about the controls in Mario Odyssey and how they impact gamers with disabilities? And then he says, angry Greg voice. These motion controls are absolute bullshit. Actions like downward and upward throw can only be done with motion controls. If you think this doesn't affect you, do you like playing in handheld mode or with a pro controller? Well, good luck trying to do the spin or homing cap throws that require separate movements of the two controllers. These controls are hard for me to do with a sprained wrist, so I can only imagine what it means for someone with permanent or more severe mobility issues. I haven't seen anyone mention this in reviews and would like to get your take on it since you're so close to the... Well, I don't think he's mad anymore. Your take on it since you're close to the Able Gamers Foundation. Did you have problems with this? You were playing a handheld, right?
So here's the thing. I played handheld.
Yeah.
I did not have problems with this because, I mean, he made it pretty clear here, but there are certain moves you can only do with motion controls.
Mm-hmm.
There was no point in the game that I was like, screwed.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that you cannot get without the motion controls. So that does kind of suck. I didn't really come across them. There was points that I was like, oh, there's a ring of coins. If I was using the motion controls, I could easily do the spin thing and get them all. Or I could just run and get them all.
Yeah.
Like, it's to me, this Mario game, there's so many options. There's so many controls and jumps and things that Mario does that I never used. There's a new move where you jump up, do a ground pound, and immediately jump up and you get a spring. Yeah. I never did that.
Gotcha.
I just kept doing the backflips like I used to. Could double jump and whatever. This game gives you the options. So the options, everyone can use the motion controls because they have the Joy-Cons.
Yeah.
Now, when I say everyone, I mean everybody that's able to do it.
Yeah.
That gets complicated. Hit me with the...
Ryan, what I did, as you mentioned here, Able Gamers, I sent your question in to the one and only Steve Spawn. He writes in and says, Dear Ryan, and then says, Angry Steve voice. Indeed it is bullshit! Nintendo often drops the ball on accessibility and mandatory motion controls simply to continue the trend. It's as if they didn't learn anything from the death of the freaking Kinect. People want good games that play the way they feel the most comfortable playing them, not bullshit gimmicks. Gah! Ahem. I'm okay. Truth is, Nintendo is the only company making no progress on accessibility, and with games like Mario Odyssey, they appear to be going backward in some respects. While PlayStation and Xbox have recognized that accessibility is important and that people with disabilities can be accommodated with easy-to-implement options that do not harm gameplay, or that allowing places like Able Gamers to build specialty controllers that can work around in-game challenges is a good thing for business. Nintendo favors motion controls and limiting third-party peripherals. To date, Nintendo will still not allow us to modify their controllers. The only thing we can do is 3D print cases that hold the Joy-Cons together so that you can play one-handed. To directly answer your question about what mandatory motion controls mean for someone with severe or profound disabilities, limiting their motion even greater than a wrist sprain, it means they can't play. If the game requires you to perform a motion-based controller move, and you can't do those motions in real life, let alone playing a video game, your options are to ask someone for assistance or to give up and go play something else. Unless you are extremely determined or play side-by-side with a friend-slash-family member, you'll probably simply play something else. Motion controls in games are not bad when they have options to avoid the mandatory part of the equation. For example, the motion controls would be fine if there was also a way to do the same maneuvers on a pro controller. But in an era where there are too many good games to play, it boggles my mind why mandatory motion controls continue to be a thing. If people wanted to throw their controllers or bodies around a room in order to enjoy their favorite games, Kinect wouldn't have been discontinued. I hope that Nintendo and their developers begin realizing comfort is important. It's not only for gamers with disabilities. Let people play the way they want to play. The only good news is that there is an adapter on the horizon that may allow us to design Xbox/PlayStation controllers that work on the Switch, which would bring accessibility to it in a roundabout way. Shame on Nintendo for making us have to figure out how to utilize their competitors' controllers to allow people to play and buy Nintendo games. Thanks for your excellent question and making Greg or me another dozen wings. Keep the excellent questions coming, kind of funny, best friends. Together, we can change the industry. Steve Spawn from Able Gamers. Thank you, as always, Steve, for writing in with perspectives that we are not equipped
at all
to understand.
Yeah.
Not understand, but I mean, it's the same thing of like, I was like last night with the pro controller, these things started popping up. I'm like, yeah, man, I don't really like motion controls or whatever. But I did it, and I shook the pro controller, and he did it. And I was like, all right, whatever. I wish these weren't here. I wish I could turn them off. I wish there was an option, but I didn't think, does this work for somebody who plays one-handed, wheelchair, does this?
All of that stuff, I'm very sensitive to and appreciate all of it. I just think that it's being blown out of proportion in Mario Odyssey, because Mario Galaxy had required motion controls a lot of them.
Yeah.
And granted, the Wii was way more focused on the motion controls, but you had to flick to do the little like extra jump and having to control all the... when he was like flying around and you grab the different stars and you like the gravity and all that shit. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, I know you're talking about. I like watching you enact it all for me.
But yeah, I mean, it's like there was multiple moments in Odyssey where there was a moon or something. I was like, oh man, if I could only throw the hat up, I would be able to get it. But then I found out, I was like, oh no, that's not what the game wants me to do. That's, I could do it.
Yeah.
But what the game wants me to do is bring this thing over here to jump up and then just get it like without the motion controls. I don't know.
There's
one moon that I've seen that I was like, how the fuck do I get it? I have no idea. I don't think I can get it without motion controls.
So someone who's beaten the game and played a lot of it, you're saying that these mandatory motion controls are in there, but you should be able to play the overwhelming majority of the game without problems.
The word mandatory makes it weird because it's like, those are just advanced techniques, I'd say. They just give you more mobility and ability to do different things with techniques that
it's mandatory in the way that you can't use a button prompt for it. There isn't a button combination, because like there's different button combinations for different things occasionally in Mario.
But it's like those are things that at no point are mandatory. And again, I'm saying that knowing full well that there's articles written about how there's things that you can't get without the motion controls. But I believe there is. I truly believe that Nintendo didn't make you use the motion controls for every single thing. But I don't know.
Okay. You remember when I said we were going to do one more Mario Nintendo question? Fuck that guy again. Jeremy writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, howdy, y'all. With Mario Odyssey launching today and getting a similar level of praise to Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, they got me thinking. Do you think Nintendo will implement some sort of DLC to Odyssey like they did with Breath of the Wild? If so, what kind of content would you think they add? Thanks for the awesome show. Keep kicking ass, Jeremy Barrett.
Yes.
Has there ever been any official comment?
No official comments. I can only hope that Odyssey gets DLC. It definitely could totally work. I can totally see how it would happen. If I read this correctly, I saw an article saying that there are officially 880 moons in Odyssey. 880 plus 120 equals 1,000. Is that reading too much into bullshit? Absolutely. But it's still a little coincidental.
Yeah.
And 120 has a lot of history with Mario games and star counts and all that. So I'm very excited about that. I have theories on what the DLC would be. I'm not going to say them because it's very spoilery for what is or isn't in this game.
It's like inner space, and we're inside Peach, like in her bloodstream and fighting stuff.
A little magic. Yeah, they did. Bowser's Inside Story.
Fuck!
But yeah, there's definitely something that I'm like, if they did DLC, it would be this.
Awesome. All right. Cool. Well,
and it's we have to do a spoiler cast
at some point when I beat him. Final question for the week comes from Justin from Texas. Justin. Hello, Greg and Tim. The big day we've all been waiting for is here. I think the question remains, what now? Anything left in 2017 y'all are excited for? Personally, the only game I can think of is Call of Duty World War II, but I know there has to be more, right? Or Are the old school November / December holiday launches clearing out in favor of that January February sweet spot that made Resident Evil 7 and Horizon stand out so well this past year? Ni No Kuni 2, Far Cry 5, Monster Hunter Worlds, Dragon Ball FighterZ, all release in that window in 2018. Would love to hear y'all map out the rest of your gameplay time in 2017 because it looks kind of barren to me. Maybe Greg can finally finish Persona 5. Thanks. Never miss a show. # games are cool, dude. Justin from Texas. The big one you forgot there was Star Wars.
Star Wars Battlefront 2. I am so fucking excited for the single player campaign. Let's go, boys.
For me, it's I'm excited for Star Wars for the single player campaign, of course, but also because I enjoyed multiplayer before. I'm looking forward to fucking around with Kevin again and seeing what's up and going around kicking the tires and that. You're also leaving out Horizon Zero Dawn's DLC, which is what? Not next week, the week after. I think it's November 7th, if that's a day that makes sense. Like, it's right around,
right, yeah.
It's right around the corner, and I can't fucking wait for that. You kidding me?
Yeah, and then on the Nintendo front, there's Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I'm not really looking forward to it, but that is a big Nintendo game coming in December. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty happy with what I have left to play.
And that's the thing, too, is there's so much stacked up. Before Game of the Year, I got to play Neo. I got to play some Nier. A lot of shit still going on there, too. November 7th, yeah, is Horizon Zero Dawn DLC. I can't fucking wait. So, yeah, there's still a ton of stuff coming. Don't worry about that.
Just want to make sure we're not missing something. But yeah, I guess all the things that I was really looking forward to, Battlefront's the last one.
Yeah. What's that date? You remember off the top
of your head? November 17th.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Squad Up. This is where one of you goes to kindoffunny.com/KFGD. You give me your name, your username, your platform of choice, and a story about why you need help in a video game. I read it here. The best friends find you. Y'all play games together and show the internet that positivity wins. This is the best community around. 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 Tim writes in. He needs help on PlayStation 4. His username is Ness Reese. N-E-S-S-R-E-E-S. N-E-S-S-R-E-E-S. Hey, Greg and Tim. This squad up request isn't for me, but is for my girlfriend / wife to be of 2 years, Vanessa. Before we got together, she wasn't into gaming, but as the years have passed, she has grown to love it just as much as me. With the launch of Destiny 2, she purchased her own PlayStation 4 so we could play together. She's currently playing Shadow of War and loving it. Vanessa is always going on. How she doesn't have any friends to play with / compare trophies with. So if you could give her a shout out, it would be greatly appreciated. Her PSN is Ness Reese, N-E-S-S-R-E-E-S, all one word. As always, keep up the great work and keep fucking that chicken. P.S. Congratulations to you, Kevin, on tying the knot.
Thank you.
Tim. Now, Tim,
Do
you want to do the next new segment or do you want to do You're Wrong?
Do the new segment first.
I got a new segment for you. It's called People Love Best Buy. Oh, my God.
They do.
So many people wrote in about the Gamers Club again, expanding on it, which is great. Because yesterday we talked about this one guy who's like, I use it. And I basically get all my games for free. I never pay full price or stuff. And I was like, well, I don't want to go to the store. So many people wrote in. You don't have to go to the store, just like AJ did. Hello, esteemed Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts. I just thought I would add to the discussion on Best Buy Gamers Club Unlocked. The main thing I wanted to point out is that you don't need to go to the store in order to get the 20% off or the $10 certificates. You can order online and get the same deals. This way, you can either elect to go to the store and pick it up or have it shipped right to your house. This way, you might lose out on a couple of bucks on shipping, but still end up saving some money, or if you can get free shipping because you take full advantage of the deal. Thanks for the endless of hours of entertainment, AJ. Now it's time for You're Wrong. This is where the folks watching live go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Tell us what we screwed up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everyone watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Please subscribe. Or listening on a podcast later, please like and subscribe and share it and review it and all that jazz. You ever do that?
Yeah.
Tim, what are we getting wrong?
Capitalist Pig, my dude.
My dude.
Says Rafael Colantonio, the former founder and president of Arcane Studios, was the man who created the term press sneak fuck about leaking the reboot of Prey 2 into Prey.
Thank you very much. I'm sure that's how he loves to be remembered.
Capitalist Pig also says, regarding the Sony release dates, I was only half listening, not sure if this actually is what you asked for or not. Please skip if not related. No, it is. Shadow of the Colossus has a generic 2018 release date. Days Gone has no official launch window as of yet. Gotcha. Detroit was confirmed by Cage himself to be in 2018.
But that was not for Detroit. That was not a 2018 on the trailer.
The E3.
Because at the end of that, Sean Layden said, anything, every E3, all the 2018s we put on stage meant that it's the first half of the year. And then David Cage at E3 said 2018, but his trailer didn't have it, leading me to think it's in the fall. David Cage.
Capitalist Pig also says, Shannon Loftus is the general manager of Xbox Publishing.
Thank you. I'm drawing a Superman symbol as always.
The article mentioned about GameCube controller was from Kotaku.
Thank you very much.
Capitalist Pig.
When we shout out that Steven, you got to figure. Another man doing great work out there, Steven Totella. Not for me, not for
J-Free 26 says, just a heads up for Tim, you can get Cappy to spin in a circle without motion controls. Just spin Mario with the control stick and then throw Cappy. Hope this helps. Well, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
But not for me, not for me.
And then John
me.
Fleshy says, according to Ryan McCaffrey on Nintendo Voice Chat, the motion controls of Mario can be done with a pro controller. That I don't
they can
think...
be done, yeah, like movement-wise with it. Does he mean with buttons?
With the pro controller?
Yeah. I was throwing my cap in circles last night with the pro controller.
Yeah, but I don't think you can throw it up.
No, I don't know.
With the pro controller.
I don't know how... Oh, with the pro... Well, I did it with the...
Joy-Cons?
Yeah, with the Joy-Cons.
Yeah, with motion.
No, not with motion. I don't know how I did it. Like, I was putting... Like, somehow he threw it up.
You were playing portably.
Right now. Right.
That's... Oh, interesting.
But I don't know how I did it. And I haven't.
Because that's not a motion controller.
It's gyro controller.
Not if you're portable.
You could still... It's still gyro.
I have no idea what it is. I've never thrown the hat.
If you're portable, you can still... And it still does the spin.
Oh, then it is. Then it is motion control.
Give me a second.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily for Friday, October 27th, 2017. Thank you so much for watching, enjoying it, hanging out with us. Remember, you can watch live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, or listen later on podcast services around the globe. No matter where you get this show, we love you so much for getting it. We love making it for you. We are all very happy today.
That's true.
It's a very good day.
It is.
If you want to be part of the show, kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Tim's going to be hosting with me on Monday morning. Mm-hmm. And, remember, it's all fucking crazy on Monday, too, because of the PlayStation
Bears
stuff.
Games Week.
So we'll see. Until next time, play some games this weekend, and no, it's been our pleasure to serve you.
Enjoy the boner jam.